Blog Talk Radio.
Update on ULU and Ujamaa, or family-centered economics, the first of many coming right up. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Missing Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, who is a founding member of Udu. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis, and it's good to be back with the family. It's been a while since I've, been at the mic. You know, I'm at the on the listening end all the time, but it feels good to be back on the mic and to join the family. So I'm doing well.
Great to have you back, and that was one of my opening statements. It's been a while since you've been here. So we are looking forward, though, excuse me, to hearing updates from you on a monthly basis. What can the family expect going forward in these monthly updates? And how did you come up with that idea?
Well, it's the season. You know, we had our annual meeting in March, and we announced some major enhancements to Ulu. And we're about 90 days, a little over 90 days out from that event. And it's about time not only for this, but in the coming few days or a few weeks, we will launch a massive campaign for new members and also to engage our members in starting Ulu chapters in their communities. And so the Dare to Win monthly Ulu in Review just fits into that that whole campaign and the need to keep the family informed and engaged. And hopefully our broadcast will also reach potential members and members of organizations and institutions so that not only are the members updated, but the community is updated as well. And what we want to do is we will send this broadcast, this recording back out this evening or tomorrow so that for the family that may have missed the broadcast for this evening, they'll have it in their inboxes. And so we want to make a monthly stab at this, and of course the third Sunday of each month is our members only call, and the announcements that would be made there and some of the exciting things that would be happening in the Ulu chapters, we call them UBCs or Ulu based collectives, we'll have a chance Thursday evening to just kind of wrap up the last 30 days, package it and get it out to the members. So that's the intent, and I think, as you mentioned coming into the broadcast this evening, this will be the first of a series every third Thursday for kind of a recap, a rally, and a war cry, so to speak, in terms of building Ujamaa, or what we call family-centered economics.
Thank you for that, Baba Hakima. I think it is important that we let the people, the family members, know what we are doing, what they are paying into, and also when we invite people to join us, they have a better idea, better understanding of who we are and what they can expect. From being members in the organization. So I'm looking forward to the future updates.
And we have some exciting things coming. Exciting from the standpoint, at least for me, that they're fundamental, they're foundational. They're things that we can build a new reality from. One of the things I want to do this evening, and I'll probably do it every third Thursday on our broadcast, I want to throw out a term and get us really to latch hold of it, marinate mm-hmm. with it, sink into our spirits. And the term is sovereign intellect or sovereign intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, of course, one of our friends has written a book entitled The Sovereign Psyche, and he talks about it right. as well. But what mm-hmm. I want to, and hopefully the example that I throw out is not too outlandish that it does damage to the subject, but I really want the listening audience to grapple with term sovereign intellect. Because when we think of ULU, we're specifically speaking of the development of an institution, tools, and other instruments of a sovereign people. So sovereign mm-hmm. intellect, I'll use this as an example, and it's going to be an outlandish example, but hopefully it'll make the point. Let's okay. say Sister Q in Atlanta or Charlotte, where we live, a tornado comes through, a hurricane comes through, a terrible storm comes through, and it just tears down everything. And mm-hmm. the natural thing that we do, we collect our wherewithal, our senses, assemble tools and assemble bodies, and we begin to rebuild because we have been damaged, things have been disrupted. The thing mm-hmm. that we never do in that situation is chase after the storm and appeal to it to come back and clean up what the mess it's made. That would be asinine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we do in society is very often we are damaged by the existence of societal elements mm-hmm. that intentionally did what it did. We'll do it again tomorrow. We'll do it again next mm-hmm. week, next year. It's a part of its life cycle. But yet,
yes.
we chase after it like we chase after the storm and beg it to correct itself. And I think if we can glean what I'm trying to get to, the sovereign intellect simply says that whatever the condition is, ultimately we are responsible for the condition we desire. No mm-hmm. one else is. And so with sovereign intellect, we build ULU brick by brick and institution by institution, team by team, and we build the global infrastructure that we call family-centered economics, but we don't do it with the permission of anybody. We do it because we have existence, we have life, and when we were born, the mandate was there for us to create. But anyway, I don't want to go too far down that, but I want to implant the term sovereign intellect. And the other thing I want to do to kind of cement that, I want to encourage everyone in the listening audience to purchase the book Sovereign Psyche. The e-book is maybe $5 or less than $5. Ezra mm-hmm. Aharon is the author, and I don't know how to spell his name, but if you Google Sovereign Psyche, or for members, when you go into the back office and you go to our resource library and you click on the book, you'll see a picture of the book. It'll take you mm-hmm. to where you can order it. And I really want us to understand what it means to have a sovereign consciousness or sovereign intellect. And I'll bring that up from time to time. Because if we say self-determination,
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't consider that a right. I consider that an obligation, an imperative, that we function based on our self-determination and sovereign intellect. When we do that, we are rarely confused, because you're not building it for anybody else. You're building it for self. But anyway, I don't want to go for a filler on that, but I do suggest that with sovereign intellect, we are building naturally a new reality, not only for ourselves, but for future generations. And instinctively, with sovereign intellect, you're going to know what to build. You're going to know when things that you are building are moving in the wrong direction. The correctives will be in place. And so I just want to say that, and then I'll get to some more concrete things. But and every Thursday I want to say a little bit more about sovereign intellect. And forgive me when I use the example of the hurricane or tornado and you laugh, but that's what we do.
And that's why I laughed, because I saw where you were going.
Yeah, exactly.
That is exactly what we do. Yeah.
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 We do it over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, sovereign intellect or family-centered economics or Ujamaa, the bricks by which we build Ujamaa, family-centered economics, or Bill Ulu, so that we can gain control of the economics of our community, there are bricks, there are stones that mm-hmm. we can pick up and place to build that. And what I want more than anything else this evening to point to those stones or those bricks. When I ask the question, do you think we should control the economics of our community? Millions of our people will answer yes to that. They'll just naturally answer yes. We can't be certain what they will do with it, but those are bricks. Those are stones that in Ulu, if we respect that answer, that yes, then we can build a new world. In other words, instinctively, we know what Billie Holiday says that when she says, God bless the child that's got his home. You don't have to read a book on philosophy to understand that. It's in our spirit. Mm-hmm. And when I ask the question, do you feel we should control the economics of our community? Most of our people will answer yes. They won't even have to think about it because it's in us. That's not to say that it's in all of us. But to the persons who answer yes to that, if you ask them a follow-up question, well, do you think you have an understanding of how we could gain control of the economics of our community? 99.9% of our people don't have a clue. They don't have an answer. Ulu has an answer. So it's incumbent upon us to ask the question, and then to supply the answer. In Ulu, and I won't go through it right now, but possibly get into it before the end of our discussion this evening, the process of, the core process of Ulu answers the question, how do you gain control of the economics of our community? And, but I wanted to stress the point that the foundational material, the bricks, the stones, whatever building material we can think of already is in existence. We don't have to teach our people instinctively to want to be in control of themselves. We want to do that. We just don't know how. And so our campaign and everything that we do, in essence, is to appeal to that instinct in us that wants to be in control of the family, the community, the nation, and then lay out specific steps by which we can accomplish that. When you made the introduction coming into the program this evening, you talked about a method, an exact method for building the system of economic self-determination that we need. I'll just mention the three elements and then make sure we give time for any questions or feedback. Fundamentally, the three elements, and it's not only for Ulu, it's for civilization building any place on the planet that we find ourselves or anyone finds themselves. And I would think that it's going to be the same thing on Mars, on Jupiter, on wherever. And the three elements essentially is a method, an effective method for pooling or aggregating your resources, pulling together your assets. That may be capital, that may be labor, your ideas, your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams. So a system, a systematic way of pulling together your resources. That's the first element. The second element is a method by which you organize those resources for the production of productive elements. In other words, you want to pull your resources together and put them in an environment where it grows, and hopefully it grows and creates a bounty or maybe even an excess or surplus bounty. So that's the second element. The second element is with your gathered, pooled, aggregated resources, the second element is organizing them in such a way that they become productive engines, productive forces. And then the third element is what you do with the bounty, what you do with the harvest. And in family-centered economics, everything is about securing the welfare of the collective. So the bounty, the harvest, you may say the profits or the surplus, is always circulated back to the community. Never hoarded by an individual, by a small group of individuals, because the whole process is in the spirit of family-centered economics. So our system, and it's more complicated and advanced than what I'm saying, but ultimately, it's these three steps. It's gathering your resources, organizing them in such a way that those resources can become different, satisfied need or a major want of the community, of the people, and then to have those productive forces produce, and then to share the wealth. And then you just repeat them over and over and over again. And you, what you do, that cycle of repeating that is the essence of the building and the sustaining of what becomes an alternative economy. With the capacity to grow and compete with other economies. But the essential nature of the economy is that it promotes and protects the interests of our people. But anyway, I want to stop there and see if there's any feedback from the family. You know, yes, I'll just say, I'll say to you and the family, sometimes if you don't stop me, I'll have the family on this call for a month and rambling and going through explanations. But anyway, I'll stick a pin in it.
Okay. Well, for my part, I will say there's rambling and then there's rambling, and I enjoy the stuff that comes off the top of your head when you're rambling. We have a caller. I'm going to open the phone. Caller with the last four digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment. Thank you.
Greetings, Sister Cube, Baba. It's always good. I'm glad to see and hear you back. And you got a powerful topic up, and I'm really enjoying it. I really actually hit the one cue by accident. I really was listening, and then when it says that I'm in the queue or something, I said, okay, I might as well go ahead and try to ask the question. But I think you really answered it when you brought up the 3 points. I was going to say using the book of Aharon in the sight portion, sovereign sight. How did you connect that, or how would you connect that? And maybe this is a description for the family to listen to, and you may be planning to go into it later. The UBC, because I heard you earlier mention that, and you seemed like you had a connection that would follow between that, and then of course the brother whom you were referring to. So let me stop and listen. But I had to admit I accidentally hit the one.
There are no accidents. You know you meant to hit that button. I'm just messing with him, of course. One of the things that Shabaka gives me a chance to do, in Ezra Haron's book, he does something that kind of shocks us into knowing what sovereign psyche or sovereign intelligence or sovereign intellect is. He uses three terms. The first one is something we're very familiar with, chattel slavery. And so that's a state. That's a people who are enslaved, chattel, or captives and chattel. And then he uses the term chattel freedom. And he suggests that's the stage where we are now. We have been told that we're free or supposedly free, but we're still bought and sold. We're still chattel because we haven't learned how to free ourselves from that cycle so that we are manipulating our own economy or we are participating in our own economy and not the pawns of another economy. Now, Ezra's second book, his first book was Pawned Sovereignty, second book, Sovereign Evolution, and he says in Sovereign Evolution that we will evolve to a position beyond sovereign freedom, to a third position. And he's suggesting that we are emerging into that stage now. And he terms it self-authentic freedom, or where we have sovereign consciousness, sovereign intellect, sovereign psyche. And from that position, you do what a mother bird does. It instinctively builds a nest. Nobody has to tell it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that state, when we emerge as a community, as a collective, as individuals with sovereign psyche, much the way that the mother bird builds a nest, we build nests too. We build the institutions and the systems in our community that would further or protect and promote our self-interest. In Ulu, those are going to be what Brother Shabaka just suggested or spoke to. Those are going to be Ulu-based collectives. Those are going to be UBCs. Those are Ulu chapters in local communities that are the embodiment of family-centered economics. And those small collectives are going to be nurtured, engineered into a sensitivity or sensibility or a mindset where they are going to incubate and bring into creative existence. Institutions will be the base of the new economy. In other words, these UBCs, our ULU chapters and local communities, will bring into creative existence co-op or group-owned business enterprises, all of which will address a basic need in the community, will create jobs, will stimulate the local economy, and in most instances, they will produce a surplus. Now, not everyone will produce a surplus, but the hope is that everyone will, but we know that all of them won't. But because the majority of them will, the overall effect is a surplus or profit. And with our process and system, there is already a formula for that, the redistribution of that surplus, most of which is going to be plowed back into the process so that it's stabilized and it grows. But a portion of it is going to be given to charity, and a portion of it is going to accrue to the benefit of the ULU members who contributed resources to make it happen. But the essence of it all is that we need to grow. We need to strengthen. We need to defend. And so most of the surplus production will be plowed back in so that incrementally we grow. Now, when you look at a community that is successful in implementing or installing family-centered economics, the idea is that over time, it's not going to happen overnight, but over time, that community emerges knowing in its spirit that it controls its territory, that it controls the economic it controls much of the commercial and economic activity in the community. It doesn't do it alone. It does it in concert with already existing black-owned businesses and enterprises, with other institutions and other formations in the community. What we want to get to is a scenario where a young child instinctively knows when it's in that environment that that's an environment that his or her parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, and extended family, we run this. We're in control of this. And it's not just the economics, because once you lay the foundation for strong economic development or empowerment of local community, you're now in a position to have an impact on the other aspects of the social life of a community. The politics, even electoral politics, policy, just the spirit of the community. I often joke about it, and I'll say it here. You know, I envision two Korean businessmen meeting on a major street in Seoul, or they may meet at a restaurant, and they say, well, there's a community in Charlotte that I would advise you not to waste your time in going up there and trying to set up a business. Because these folk, they call themselves ULU, it's sold up. There is no opportunity, you know, for exploitation and saturation of your a business idea in that space. But anyway, Shabaka mentioned the UBC. That's the sale within ULU that is the productive sales. We marshal our resources and we place those resources in the hands of the collective that's in local communities. After adequate research and all the due diligence that we have to do to create new group-owned enterprises. When I say group-owned enterprises, these enterprises belong to all of us in ULU. In other words, they are businesses that belong to the extended family. And they're not businesses that, Sister Q, if you typically own the business and you decided to sell it, like BET was sold, like other businesses mm-hmm. in our community were sold, you don't have the capacity. You don't have the ability to sell it because it doesn't belong to you. You may run the business. Yeah. You know, we may commission you and reward you to be the manager of the business, but it's a business that's owned by all of us. But anyway, I digress. Okay. I'll stop again.
Brother Shabaka, anything else you want to say or add? Okay.
No, sister, brothers, you said a mouthful there. I hope that the family is taking notes and beside myself is ready to ask questions or, you know, get more clarity. But thanks a lot, Baba, for your response.
Thank you. Okay. Right now we don't have anyone else with their hand up,
okay.
Baba Hakima,
okay.
So
all
you
right.
can continue.
Continue. Okay, good, good,
mm-hmm.
good. I do want to make, I just want to follow up from our March meeting. For members you were who attended the meeting or who watched the video clips, and for members who were not at our annual meeting, it was a 3-day affair, and
mm-hmm.
the video was uploaded to YouTube in a protected environment. And all
okay.
3 days, all of our members can go and view it anytime they want to. You just go to our members portal or what we call the back office. And, of course, it's a password-protected environment. Go there and go to the resource library, and very early you'll see in the listings the 3-day video
mm-hmm.
Recordings of that event. The first day and then part of the second day, we talked about ULU going through some legal and structural changes or updates. We have submitted to the state of Georgia an application in the name of Us Lifting Us to become a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And that probably will be approved this week. So what we are doing is bringing into existence a nonprofit portion of what we do, and that nonprofit will be positioned as the umbrella or the mothership of ULU. Our current institution will still be in place, but it
mm-hmm.
will be that aspect of ULU that is only concerned with bringing into creative existence new businesses and supporting them for success. And so after the nonprofit is created and all of us will be naturally a part of that, then after that, then members who choose to become a part of the for-profit aspect of what we do in ULU, we'll actually have to fill out another application with stipulations and become part of that separate from joining ULU. So it'll be two steps instead of one. Right now in ULU, you only fill out one application. And once this transformation is made, we're going to separate it. And then all of us who are building equity in ULU, in addition to being a part of the nonprofit, will also be a part of the for-profit. In other words, a clear separation. Mm-hmm. Now, some of us, some members, will choose to be a part of ULU and never choose to be a part of the for-profit entity. And that's their right. That's not a problem. Now, remember, mm-hmm. in ULU, members are not only individuals, but members can be institutions. Another LLC, another nonprofit, another organization or institution can be a member. So we're going to always have members who participate in ULU in very creative and powerful ways that may never be a part of the for-profit arm of ULU. So I just say to the family that possibly by the time you listen to this recording, for those that are not listening live tonight, the 501c3, the nonprofit corporation, will have come into existence. And most of us won't feel the difference. It's just a way of protecting our members and protecting ULU overall. My prediction, and I'm not afraid to put this out, that ULU will become the largest organization of African people in our history, at least coming out of the West. It's mm-hmm. been calculated that the Garvey Movement had more than 6 million members. ULU is structuring itself to accommodate that and more.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with ourselves, if we're talking about creating an energy and force such that we can break away from the explorative, dominating forces that have grip over us now, you know, we need not be afraid of becoming large and becoming powerful and becoming meaningful as it relates to the parlay that occurs between, you know, civilizations and nations and groups on the planet. We've got to be a major player. And so I want to suggest that the changes that we're making is going to put us in a position where we're going to be able to manage the growth that will naturally take place with the implementation of the things that we are about to bring forward to the community.
Yes. Baba Hakima, regarding the restructure, if someone mm-hmm. already has been putting monies in and in the old, under the old, do they have to fill out new forms to move that from the nonprofit to the profit-bearing side now? Or are they like grandfathered into the for-profit part?
They're going to be grandfathered into the nonprofit part. They're already a part of the for-profit part.
Mm-hmm.
And automatically everybody is going to be a member of the new nonprofit. But those
okay.
that have begun to build equity are going to be required to affirm that
okay.
position. And
mm-hmm.
And so they'll be asked and positioned to fill out a new application with
mm-hmm.
certain disclaimers so that
okay.
it's clear that they understand and agree with the parameters that
mm-hmm.
that are set. And so, yes, the question is, the answer is that we will be, all of us will be grandfathered into the new nonprofit. And
okay.
those of us who have begun to build equity in ULU will have to affirm that and fill out some additional paperwork. And we're going to position those members who have already begun to build equity. You're going to have the ability to have a more direct impact on what happens to the investment dollars in ULU. So that's a good question. And the question is both hands. In other words, we're all going to be a part of the new entity. We'll shift that automatically. And then
okay.
we'll double back. And for you and myself and others who have an equity position, we're going to make sure that it's clear, you know, our role. And I would probably predict that if a person, well, I won't go down that. I won't go down. We're going to have some live sessions with ULU members and the attorney and maybe people working with the attorney so that we can clarify any questions that may come. But it's an exciting time. When I say that we're going to have more members than the Garvey movement,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a marker. I'm putting down a marker. And I'm simply
sure.
saying
mm-hmm.
that you can't get there unless you envision it. And
mm-hmm.
we are envisioning that. And see, for some of our listeners, you may not understand that ULU is a global formation. We have a few members in Canada, Europe, Africa, the Caribbean, South America. We've got one member, even though it's the U.S. and Hawaii. We've got another member in South Korea. Who knows? We may have members in Ukraine. But as we build, not only are we going to have members in these communities, we're going to have productive units. We're going to have group-owned enterprises in these communities. And initially, they're going to be small. But gradually, you'll see medium-sized enterprises, and later you'll see bigger enterprises. And you'll see these enterprises in various industries. They won't all be in retail. They won't all be in hospitality or transportation or whatever. They'll be all over the place. And
mm-hmm.
strategically, some of them will look to have a major impact on particular industries. You know,
sure.
let's say it's an industry dealing with chocolates, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we grow the beans, or with
mm-hmm.
with coffee, or with shea butter, or whatever, and so
mm-hmm.
these will grow. But anyway, I don't want to go far afield. But so we're talking about ULU-based collectives or ULU chapters and local communities being the focal point of building out the method, the exact method that you spoke about, spoke about earlier.
Yes.
But the point that I wanted to make as a report from our March meeting is that the changes that the membership gave the board permission to pursue,
mm-hmm.
we're involved in pursuing those changes, and they're coming about. And I want to make sure that there, if there's any question or feedback from the audience.
Okay. We don't have any hands up at this point. If you would like to ask Baba Hakima a question or make a comment, please call 929-477-2789 if you're on your computer. And if you're already on the line, press 1, and we'll see your hand and recognize you. Baba Hakima, what I wanted to say is when you were mentioning about the shea butter, the shea beans to make shea butter and the coffee, and I think it's important for people to understand that we intend to be doing all of that. You know, if it impacts us as a community, we want to take it from the bean to the finished product, whatever it is, in food, clothes. We want to, you know, weave the fabric and sew the garment, put it in the store and sell it. So, you know, if the shoes, we want to be anything that we think we're going to need in our day-to-day activity, we want to be the producer of that.
Exactly.
And as well as health care and everything else. So it doesn't matter, because, you know, like people will say, well, I don't have any skills as far as making clothes or shoes or whatever, but you have a skill that you're probably selling to someone else right now.
Yeah.
We need that skill. And so I think that's important for people to examine what are they doing and how can it be applied to helping ourselves as a community.
Right. Now, it's important for the family to understand that we're not talking about Ulu doing all of this alone. We're
mm-hmm.
talking about Ulu and group-owned enterprises in concert with already existing businesses and enterprises and new enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to elude ourselves in thinking that we're the only player. But if we don't interject bone enterprises into the landscape of the business activity in our community, then it stays the same. One
mm-hmm.
of the things we know emphatically that what we are doing is not working as it relates to economic empowerment for ourselves. And so we know that individually owned enterprises as a model of group empowerment will never work. However, when you introduce and integrate group-owned enterprises in the community that works collaboratively with already existing institutions, and maybe they're individually owned or small group owned. They may be owned by the church. They may be owned by the lodge. They may be owned by the society or whatever. But because
mm-hmm.
you have introduced group-owned enterprises that become a major player, it changes the mix, and it stabilizes the community. It stabilizes
mm-hmm.
the economy of the community. Because now you have an element of the economic activity of the community that's tied to the benefit of the community in a real way, not in a fictitious way. In other words,
mm-hmm.
we can say now, support black-owned businesses, but we have no way of influencing those businesses to do the right things with their surplus.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, it benefits an individual or a small group. Now, obviously, we employ each other, That's a great benefit. But right now, from an economic standpoint, when we put individually owned businesses into creation and into the mix, those businesses, from the standpoint of what benefits the community, does not have a steering mechanism or rudder. They're liable to go anyplace. Someone can come into the community and plop down a piece of cash and buy it, and it could be from Pakistan, it could be from wherever. But so I want to make the point that in no way is Ulu suggesting that everything in the community is going to be a group-owned enterprise. But a substantial part of the mix will be that, so that now we have a way of strategically influencing the flow of commerce in our communities and in our nations. Right now, we don't have a way of steering that energy. And through Ulu and other enterprises like that, that champion group-owned enterprises, we will have that advantage.
Thank you for that. We still don't have any more hands raised.
Okay. If you don't mind, what I want to do is just put a cap on it and say that for those of us who are listening, we will capture what we have shared this evening. We're going to package it, and we're going to put it back out to you, those of you who are on our email list. Go back over it, formulate questions, share the recording with others. And I want to encourage members who are not already taking an equity stake in Ulu to become equity partners with us. And we're going to be championing or making attractive a subscription at the $25 level for most of our members. Some of our members will do $100 a month or $50 a month, or will write a check or simply go on the website and plop down more money. But we want to popularize the $25 per month subscription level. And for members, just simply go in the back office, go to the Contribute tab, and select $25, select monthly, and begin to contribute on a consistent basis. By the end of this year, we want to have more than 1,000, you know, maybe multiple thousands of us who are subscribing at that level to fund the awesome ideas for new business development that will be coming out of the UBCs. And so look forward to this recording in your inbox tomorrow. Share it with other Ulu members, and then be prepared to come back next the third Thursday of next month for additional updates. We will have launched what I call the Seed to Harvest campaign by then, and we'll be asking all of you to join the campaign and to do some very creative things in social media and on the phone and handouts to people that you meet. We need to now join together in a very energetic campaign to increase Ulu membership and to encourage all of us to join or form new Ulu-based collectives or Ulu chapters in your community. So I just want to say that.
Okay.
But basically, that's it.
Okay. Well, you know, Baba Hakima, usually I ask the speaker for the evening, what is it you would like to make sure the family takes with them from this evening's discussion? Tonight, I'm going to tell you what I'm taking from this. And that is, after a storm, we do not invite the storm to come back and help clean up.
Exactly.
And that is the reason, that's the whole reason for Ulu. We're not inviting storms. We're cleaning up our own stuff. I like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. So let's see. We don't have any hands raised, and it is almost 10 o'clock. So I will thank you, Baba Hakima, for sharing the update with us, the first of many monthly updates that we will expect regarding Ulu and Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. We want to thank everybody that joined us this evening. We hope people will have questions. We'll look forward to listening to the playback, and we'll get back with us so that we can be sure that as we do these every week, every month, that we're answering questions that people have. Ask everyone to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock p.m. for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
All right. Thank you, Sister Q.
Thank you, bro. Peace.
Peace.
Out of the drum we go. As a people, out of the drum we come. Hey. Out of the drum we come. Oh. As a people, out of the drum we come. No. Oh. Out of the drum. Everybody dance. Respect yourself. Everybody, everybody dance.